afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Thursday to you. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KPK. Hope you're having a great day. And again, thoughts are with the folks in wine country and elsewhere where the fires are burning and all the loss of life and the fear and the just unease that goes with that. But on a positive note, the smoke seems to have cleared out of this neck of the woods. So as you find yourself thinking about perhaps in the last few days, lamenting the fact that we had to deal with that, remember that those poor souls are still dealing with the horrible direct effects of the fires. last things going on I want to get to this afternoon. Talk about how some states in this nation do things differently. And I found it very, very interesting. I'm going to drill down on this a little bit more after as we work our way through the program. But in the days, in fact, the hours immediately following the Las Vegas massacre, people, candidly, those on the left, were coming up with ideas with regard to the bump stock, for example, and other gun control thoughts to deal with and minimize the likelihood of something like this happening again. And I think I probably angered some of my conservative friends because I said, I don't think it's too soon to look at ways to minimize the likelihood of such a horrific event being perpetuated again in the future. I just don't think that's, I don't know that there is a timeline on that. But looking at the data, looking at what they're really coming up with, and any hope for changing that is something that I respectfully see differently. It's a feel-good thought to outlaw the bump stock, for example, because they're so easily manufactured. If you've got access to a 3D printer, you've got virtually an unlimited supply of bump stocks and, in fact, the ability to manufacture firearms. So creating legislation prohibiting conduct that represents an element of unenforceability simply for a feel-good, I think is contrary to the best purposes and the best intentions, the goal, the objectives of government. I respectfully see that differently. But the timeline, recognizing the horrific nature of what took place, what was done, and trying to find legitimate ways to minimize any hope, any prospect, any risk of that happening again in the future, I understand that. But we're going to talk about how differently people see gun legislation and the risk to innocent people as we work our way through the program. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about this Weinstein scandal. And we've talked about it a little bit, but as I see more about this, and again, I will not compromise the nature and the tone of this program, especially understanding that there are good people picking their kids up from school during this hour, and I don't want to go into a salacious conversation, especially in this block. We know, largely, I think, the nature and extent of the allegations of misconduct leveled at Mr. Weinstein. And in fact, if you care to know more, there is an abundance of evidence to support the claims, to include his own words acknowledging his misconduct, acknowledging his criminality. And in fact, I think a horrific display of evidence that suggests that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is corrupt and was compromised by the influence and wealth of Mr. Weinstein, and specifically evidence along those lines to show that it was very likely a financial contribution from the attorney representing Mr. Weinstein that that influenced the Manhattan DA's decision to not file, in spite of the fact that the police, the NYPD, did present inculpatory evidence to include Mr. Weinstein's own voice implicating himself in criminal conduct, coupled with, buttressed by, corroborated by the statement of a victim, a young woman, 22-year-old victim, who supported through her testimony the evidence revealed in the course of that recording. So a lot has been said about celebrities sticking together, the sleazy nature of the entertainment industry. People oftentimes use Hollywood to describe that, even though Hollywood is really just a zip code in the city of Los Angeles. But Mr. Weinstein is a kingmaker or queenmaker, I guess, as it were, in the motion picture industry. And I guess to every level therein, So that group does. They have clearly circled the wagons. And, of course, there's a political tone to it because Mr. Weinstein has been a profound supporter of Democrat candidates for office and has rubbed elbows with and exchanged time and dining and drinking and partying experiences with the Obamas and the Clintons, and had supported Hillary Clinton in her bid for president of the United States. And so the question was asked, why does not Mrs. Clinton return the money given by Mr. Weinstein? And I'll tell you candidly, I don't know that if he's separated himself from his money and given it to her. And there's a lot of things she can do with that money. Very, very, very little in terms of limitation as to what she can do with it. Giving it back to him because he's a creep? I don't know that I necessarily am supportive of that. But I did think it was interesting to hear how she reacted when she was asked about that. And I think she's being overwhelmingly disingenuous in her response. Okay, that's a euphemism. She's lying. It's an absolute clear lie in terms of how she responds. Here's Secretary Clinton when she's asked about returning the money that Mr. Weinstein gave.
Well, there's no one to give it back to. What other people are saying, what my former colleagues are saying, is they're going to donate it to charity. And of course I will do that. I give 10% of my income to charity every year. This will be part of that. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, a couple things. First of all, she's subtly referring to the contributions by Mr. Weinstein as income, interestingly enough, because I'm reasonably certain she's not paying income tax on that, on those proceeds. But let's be honest here. If she's talking about cash that Mr. Weinstein bundled, where he, let's say he had an event, hosted an event, a party, and different people came to that event, and each gave the maximum contribution allowed by law, which is $2,700, by the way, per election cycle, then there's an absolute paper trail on that. Absolute clear paper trail. That all has to be accounted for under the law. I have hosted events for candidates. I have been a major donor. I've been the beneficiary of major donors in my past. And I can tell you that every dollar, over 99 bucks from a given contributor, is tracked and accounted for. So for her to assert that she cannot, that there's no means through which to do that, is absolute dishonesty. And she knows that. She understands this game better than just about anybody. So what she chooses to do with it, I don't particularly care. But her lack of candor, her dishonesty in response to that, I think is reprehensible. And by the way, if you look at the extent to which she stood by her husband, to the extent that she adversely impacted people who all generally refer to as his victims, and I know there's been talk about Bill Clinton having been involved in scandals, including rape. I've never seen evidence to persuade me to believe that that's true. I think it's likely. It's, the potential is there. But what we do know about him is that he engaged in misconduct with very, very willing participants. And I see that as vastly separate and distinct from that of what Mr. Weinstein is alleged to have done. Not only is he alleged to have done it, but there is a rather significant trail of evidence to support that. So just to set the record straight, Mrs. Clinton, you absolutely know the source of the money and can clearly return it back to the donor if you see fit. That's an option for you. And the idea of simply taking 10% of that you refer to as income and giving it back or giving it to charity, what a crock. What an absolute crock. That is as insincere and disingenuous and outright dishonest as anything I've ever heard. You got thoughts? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. When we come back, we're going to talk about gun safety, gun control, gun legislation, and what things legislative bodies can and have done in the spirit of protecting your safety. Get your thoughts on it. All that coming up. Don't go away.
The KFBK Afternoon News with Kitty O'Neill. Depend on it. Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. Going to get your calls in a moment regarding Hillary Clinton and her statement that, I don't know what to do with this money, but I will give 10% of my, continue to give 10% of my income to charity. Okay. And again, I could throw a little defense somebody's way if they say, yeah, this person donated to my cause. And then later I found that they were a sleaze, that they were horribly inappropriate. So if you say, I'm not going to give that money back to a sleaze, I understand that. I can respect that. I can. I know many people can't. They think, just give it back no matter what. Why would you give money back to somebody who's already lawfully and willingly separated from themselves because you have an issue with the manner in which they live their lives? I respectfully think that's okay. But let's be honest about it. To suggest that, oh, I give 10% of all of my income to charity, therefore this will be subject to that. Well, and the bigger deal is she has been up close and personal, good buddies with this guy for a long, long time. And there had to be, I think, based upon things that are coming out, and again, I feel compelled to disclose that I had never, ever heard of Harvey Weinstein prior to this scandal breaking. I have no idea, had no idea anything about the guy, but I've read all of the salacious details of this. Again, I like to think I have more class than to contaminate the airwaves with that. But if you choose to read about it on your own, it will inform you to the extent I think you'll understand and share my assessment that this guy is the epitome of a sleaze. He's terrible, and his conduct goes beyond morally reprehensible. I truly believe it teeters into rather significantly the criminal arena, and I think there was more than enough evidence garnered in an investigation conducted by the NYPD to demonstrate that criminality. And it's reprehensible that the Manhattan DA didn't do the right thing with it. And to add to that disgust, it looks as though the very likely motivating factor in that filing decision was financial contributions from the attorney representing Weinstein to the Manhattan District Attorney. It's the absolute worst. I'm going to get your calls in a moment, but I want to just share this with you as well. As we look at anytime you're in the aftermath of a horrific incident of gun violence in which innocent lives are taken, the age-old discussion about gun control comes up. In this particular case, referring to Vegas, the bump stocks came up, and that's a big deal, and everybody wants to stop that. Again, I'm not troubled by the fact that it comes up quickly, because I have, when I read about people committing egregious criminal acts against large numbers of people and destroying, ending, and forever compromising the lives of other human beings. I want to know a little bit about why this was allowed to happen. If you have somebody who's been in the system, somebody whose criminality is well known and the system failed them, failed society, I should say, then I want to know about that. And I don't think there's anything shameful about doing that in the immediate aftermath of such an event. But it's the substance, the content, in terms of the benefit of the changes that are proposed that I think worthy of discussion. And really, truly looking at the bump stock question, I think, honestly, it's spinning wheels. There's no benefit whatsoever because they are so easily manufactured, so readily available. So, yeah, if it's going to make you feel better to outlaw them, I suppose that's okay, but is that what we want to use the power and force of the federal government or state government, for that matter, to modify and restrict the behavior of people just for a feel-good when that stated goal is unachievable because it's unenforceable? Now, there is a particular state in the nation that has just taken a bold move. After years and years of enhancements, that is to say, enhanced sentences for those who have been found to be armed in the commission of felonies that would add 2, 3, 5, 10 years, 7 years in there as well as an option to their sentence because they're armed in the commission of the felony. That enhancement has been scrubbed for the most part. So the apparent fascination with or love for firearms trumps the impact, the adverse impact on society, or so it would appear. And you might be thinking, what's up with these crazy people in Texas where they have such a fondness for firearms that they would eliminate the enhancement for criminal activity perpetuated while armed in specific felony crimes? Well, guess what? It's not Texas. It's California, where the Democrat-controlled governor and legislature have eliminated enhancements for being armed in the commission of a felony. We'll get into the details of that and talk about the specific bill that's now law right after this. Don't go away.
What do you do when you've been up battling a fire for 48 hours without sleep and resources are stretched beyond thin? Team coverage of the Northern California wildfires continues on the KFBK Morning News tomorrow.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you on News Radio KFBK. We've got multiple topics in the hopper now. We're talking about Hillary Clinton and her. I think the bigger story is her lack of objective honesty when she's asked about will she return the money to Harvey Weinstein. If you think about it for a moment, as I said earlier, if some sleazebag gives you money and you've got the money and they willingly gave it, it wasn't always extorted from them or anything of that nature, but you find out that they're a reprehensible human being engaged in just horrific misconduct, up to and including criminal. I understand the reason to disassociate yourself from that person. I understand the need, the call for criticism of the person that displays that kind of behavior. But why would you give them their resources back to empower and embolden them, give them a chance to do other things? So I wouldn't object at all to the notion of her saying no. His conduct is terrible. I thought he was a good guy, which I think she knew he was not, but she didn't care. She's been married to a guy who's a sleaze, not to the level that Mr. Weinstein seems to be, but a sleaze, that's safe to say, right? And she's defended that and actually compromised the well-being of those who have been adversely affected by his sleaziness, referring to her husband. But I don't see the need to give the money. But why would you give money to a sleaze? He's voluntarily separated himself from it. But then to say, well, there's no way I can do it. Yes, there is. There absolutely is. And to assert that because it is your custom to give 10% of your income to charity, this will fall into that same category. Well, that's a crock. It's absolutely not true. So we got thoughts on that. We also have this insane move on the part of the California legislature and none other than the governor himself, who has now signed into law SB Senate Bill 620. Which I believe is the height of irony. The same legislatures, members of the legislature who keep calling for more restrictions on the possession of and use of firearms by law-abiding citizens are now in support of legislation to reduce the penalties for criminals who actually use a gun to commit a felony. How do you reconcile that in your mind? They're screaming like smash cats when somebody commits a gun crime. And I'll give them a pass on that. I understand that. Looking for ways to stop that from happening again, I think is okay. The solutions they reach, I think, are largely laughable. But looking, even in the very, very early hours after a horrific event, I think is okay. I do the same thing. I forever find myself looking at a set of circumstances in which somebody does something horrific to another human being or multiple human beings, and I want to know what's their background. How did nobody know about this? Well, in so many cases, and in fact, I'll say the overwhelming majority of cases, you find that people did know about that. And in fact, different parties within the system, like the police and the prosecutors and the courts, tried to do the right thing. They tried to deal with these people who have in a criminal way, displayed their propensity to commit egregious crimes against other human beings, only to have the system and the grander scheme release them from custody, put them back in the streets where they reoffend. But to be critical of that or look for solutions in the very early period of time after a horrific event, I'm not troubled by that at all. So it's the substance. And why in the world would the legislature and the governor be motivated to reduce this enhancement on people for being armed in the commission of a felony? This goes back to the George Duke Majan days, and I'm not referring to George Duke Majan as governor. Prior to that, George Duke Majan as attorney general, a very, very fine attorney general, I might add, in my humble opinion, when they created the campaign Use a Gun, Go to Prison, enhancing the nature of it. It's not infringing upon the Second Amendment rights of citizens or parties in this country, citizenship notwithstanding. It is going after the behavior, the conduct, people who engage in felonious misconduct while armed because they present an enhanced level of threat to the safety and very lives of other human beings. Therefore, they should experience an enhanced impact by way of consequence to them for their egregious behavior. Makes all the sense in the world. That's undone now. With a vote of the California legislature and a stroke of the pen by the governor, Senate Bill 620 is law, and those enhancements are largely gone. So this legislature, this governor, who can't get to a microphone fast enough to criticize the NRA and the Second Amendment and the right for citizens to keep and bear arms when something bad happens, are now increasing the likelihood that a person with a propensity to violate the law, a known quantity, will be punished to a reduced extent for their nefarious conduct. You got thoughts? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Again, we got two topics in the hopper, so let's check in with Brian in Sacramento. Brian's been holding on a long time. Brian, welcome to the conversation, sir. Thank you for hanging on.
Well, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. How are you?
Good. During the election, it came out that Hillary donates to her own charitable organization.
Yeah.
So she could donate that 10% to somebody else or back to herself?
She could donate it back to herself. And 10%, yeah. 10%, honestly, is nothing. That's de minimis. That leaves her 90% to do with whatever she wants. And again, the charity to whom she gives that money may very well be her own foundation, which, and this is not just my opinion, there's an abundance of data on this to support the fact that this was used, these proceeds have been used for recreational activities, for travel, for all sorts of things, to pay people close to the Clinton family for a healthy salary.
I don't think she does that.
I'm sorry, say again?
I'm sorry, I apologize. We blanked out there for a second. I said, if she were to use it for something positive, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's the kind of person that's going to do that.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I'm sorry to say this because I know a lot of people are hanging on to her. And I don't take any joy or satisfaction in her defeat. But there's so much evidence to support that she is not a particularly gracious, good, charitable, kind person. That's just the evidence that's there. You can read into that what you will, but I'll say this: once she has the money, once Weinstein or anybody else gives it to her, I do support the idea of her doing with it what she sees fit. And I'd respect somebody who said, "Yeah, he gave me money, and now I see what a sleazebag he is. So I'm going to do something positive with that money. Maybe give it to." You know, around these parts, you could give it to an organization like WEAVE, Women Escaping a Violent Environment. You could give it to some charity that benefits people who are oppressed by sexual predators. Why not? Wouldn't that be an irony to turn that into something positive for the very people that Mr. Weinstein seems to victimize? So, yeah, valid observations, Brian. I appreciate the call very much, sir. Let's check in with Gordon in Sacramento. Gordon, good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the conversation. Thank you for holding on.
Hi, John. Hey, on this on the subject of background checks for firearms, you know, as a social worker in the mental health field, on interviews in the very general sense within the boundaries of HIPAA, we in the industry find that there are certain vulnerabilities in an individual's reactions to their environment.
Right.
And we work with those within the confines of therapy.
Right.
My opinion is that we somehow create a smart tool to question prospective gun owners and find out what those vulnerabilities would be in situations where their reactions to their environment would be aggressive or violent in a way that would lead to perhaps the vulnerabilities that use firearms in a way that ended up in a, you know, life and limb.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely something that's valid for conversation and analysis and looking harder. The first concern I have with regard to that is if you have somebody who over the years has perhaps even had access to firearms, which honestly is almost everybody. It's very, very hard to find somebody who doesn't have access in some form or fashion because guns are out there. They're very easy to come by. There are nearly as many guns in this country as there are people, very, very close to the same numbers. If you put, you know, infants and minor children and the disabled and infirmed into the mix, there's a gun for everybody. There's north of 300 million guns in the country and a population of, what, 320 million people? So it's the access to and the proliferation of firearms is very real. So if somebody has had that and they show certain objective symptomology by way of their thought process that you could identify that shows that they are, that they could actually pose an articulable risk, that I would be inclined to counter. I think that's legitimate. That's a good approach. But then I would be inclined to counter with the possibility that they've had access to that before. They've had those ideations in the past, and they never acted on it. So would they not, by virtue of their own behavior, suggest that the ability, the strength to actually deny that person their constitutional right, their Second Amendment right to protect themselves, would be an unfair, undue process? And I think that it gets so complicated because it is such an enormous thing to deny somebody.
Let me weigh in on that. Using each of these pieces as factors,
right?
Their criminal history, their mental health history, their or lack thereof.
Yeah.
In a targeted questionnaire, all of these factors together render you with the product of the individual as either safe,
yep,
seemingly safe enough under the best.
I think
you can produce.
I actually like that. I think it makes a lot of sense in totality to look at everything. And I agree. Hey, Gordon, I appreciate the call very much, sir. We got to take a quick break and take care of other business. More calls coming up right after this. Don't go away.
First for breaking news, 24/7, Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. I want to jump right back into your calls, talking about why the California legislature and the governor has done this insane thing. We can also talk about Weinstein and Hillary Clinton. But to my way of thinking, if you incentivize certain kinds of behavior, you increase the likelihood that people will engage accordingly. So you have a legislature and a governor who has been outspoken in favor of using gun control as a means by which to minimize violent criminal conduct. I don't share that because I understand the futility of it, but I still respect people, and I think you'll listen to what they have to say. But in this case, they're actually reversing legislation that I think was very, very, very productive, very effective. When you take people who have engaged in certain kinds of criminal activity and use that as a means by which to predict their future behavior, and then impose additional sentence consequences upon them. That's scrubbed now. So you put more people back on the streets of the state of California who have engaged in the exact kind of behavior that we don't want to see. Let's get your calls. Let's check in with Katie in Sacramento. Katie, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation.
Hey, John. A couple of things. Number one, every time something like Vegas comes up, automatically, you know, it's the what kind of laws can we do about guns?
Yeah.
What kind of laws can we do about guns? Well, number one, some of the strongest gun laws are in Chicago and Washington, D.C.
Very true.
And that hasn't helped at all. There's more gun-related deaths and just daily,
right,
not a big thing like Las Vegas, but just daily. And now that California has the law you're talking about and the sanctuary state, I think a lot of that criminal element is going to come out to Sacramento. But my big point is, if someone wants to kill a lot of people, they're going to figure out a way, whether it's a bomb in a backpack, whether it's an airplane, whatever.
I agree.
A perfect, perfect, innocuous Jim Jones and Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Kool-Aid.
Yep, you're
he killed hundreds of people.
Of course,
with
poison Kool-Aid. You're absolutely correct. Yes. It didn't kill him because it gave him diabetes. It killed him because it was poison.
It was poisoned. And the same thing with the person that was tainting Tylenol.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
All across the country.
And in the case of this Vegas killer, he had explosive devices, equipment with him that was capable of killing far more people. And I'm grateful for the fact that he chose to not use that first. So I understand what you're saying. I still think it's appropriate to give pause, and if somebody wants to float out an idea and look for a better way to do business and minimize it, I'm open to listening to it. But here's a case where you have people where you absolutely know what they have done, and they have committed felony crimes, and they have been armed in the commission of those crimes. I mean, this is legislation that I've got to believe the gun owners and the NRA would be okay with. But the California legislature and the governor have said, no, We are going to reduce the consequences imposed upon you. This is from a group that clearly seems to have disdain for firearms in the Second Amendment. It makes no sense. And I'll tell you what, if Governor Brown had the capacity legally to run for another term, I think he'd get it. So it's a weird, weird, weird place in which we live. Hey, Katie, I appreciate the call very much. That's it for me, as you can tell by the sound of the music. But stick around. Why, you ask? Well, let me tell you why. Because the lovely and talented Katie O'Neill is right here next to me. She's coming up next with the Afternoon News. I get to see you tomorrow. Have a great one.